Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
Reading from New Scientist, 6th of October 2018, Episode 1, but just part of people following it, just part of cardiac rehab. I'll stop and give comments as I try and think and cross-check things as I read them. And this is the editorial article, and it's a picture showing various models of Einstein and a woman sitting back checking her mobile phone. But this is the editorial, and it says, at last a third Nobel. So there's a Nobel Prize which went, there's hundreds and hundreds going out to men, but it's only been three Nobel Prizes. I think two of them, two of them went to Marie Curie, and we'll find out a bit more about it. Okay, but it has been decidedly mixed week for female physicists. So this is about the physicists. Is there a biological difference between the male and female brains? It's a question almost everyone has an opinion on, but where firm evidence is lacking. Male brains are, on average, larger than female brains, but the size is not indicative of the capability. Studies on the brain's anatomy show that, on average, there are structural differences in the brains of men and women, but the variation between individuals is far larger than between the sexes. In other words, there's no such thing as a male or female brain. As for what goes... as for what goes on... That seems an odd way of doing statistical analysis, but... Okay. It's not so much that, it's just a... thing, but I mean, if there is a like a male vector and a female vector in space, though the actual there's so much of physics which doesn't fit that. As for what goes on inside our brains, countless studies have investigated whether women think differently to men, are more likely to have certain kinds of personalities, or favour particular interests. The answer: probably not. In 2014, a review of more than 100 behavioural measures found that there was no way to accurately group them into two distinct categories. In other words, personality elements such as interest in science exist on a continuous spectrum. That specific example is particularly relevant this week, following the talk by physicist Ascendo Struma, speaking at a conference held in CERN, home of the Large Hadron Collider. Struma claimed that women are vastly underrepresented in the field because, quote, interest and ability are not uniformly distributed. In other words, it is not sexism holding them back, but inherent biological differences. Okay, well, yeah, I suppose this probably walked into that one. Probably trying to say something more detailed. In fact, it's an absurd to try to conclude that women are biologically inferior in physics, not merely because of the question has not been adequately addressed in scientific literature, but also because all our brains evolved at the same time when nobody bothered about the Higgs boson. What we do know is that for centuries women have been held back from pursuing scientific careers by men. Take Sophie Germain, a brilliant 18th century mathematician who was it's hard to say. I don't know. Though that sounds a very logical argument, that's not necessarily true, because there's almost nothing we did evolve to do is there. Take Sophie Germain, a brilliant 18th century mathematician who was forced to pretend to be a man with correspondence in order to get her ideas heard, or Emmy Noether, a physicist. Emile or something like that. This is the famous one of gauge invariance. A physicist who transformed our understanding of the universe almost as much as her counterpart Albert Einstein, but was unable to get a job at within a university. tell someone about. You don't have to be a woman, you just have to be out of the system. It's pertinent that this issue being raised the same week as the Nobel Prizes for Science has been awarded. Donna Strickland has become the third woman ever to receive a physics Nobel Prize in the 117-year history, while 207 have gone to men. Strickland's award is a small step rectifying deep historical structural imbalances, but I think it's just because she got the prize. I don't know. They don't do it for balance. Okay. But no excuse for imbalances continuing. This physics really does need all the brains it can get. Huge strides have been made. CERN has its first female boss, particle physicist Fabiola Ghianotti. But when people ask why more girls don't study physics, perhaps they should think about how it feels to be a schoolgirl in a world where men like Thurma tell you that your brain is second rate at physics. Like, physics is so hard, right, girls? Look, no, I just think it's sad. The number of people who even understand properly physics or care about it is so small. Lovely if they were all, okay, Nobel Prize winners. The Nobel Prize winners for physics and physiology or medicine have been announced. The physics prize went to Arthur Ashkin, Gerard Moreau, and Donna Strickland for their work on lasers. This is the first time a woman has won a physics Nobel Prize in 55 years and only the third time ever. Ashkin was awarded won half the prize for inventing the optical tweezers, a way to manipulate tiny objects using focused beams of light. The other half was shared between Morrow and Strickland for their method of generating high-density ultra-short pulses, which can be used to drill various precise holes in materials, including living tissues. I'll be able to just sort of know it by creating a short pulse, which has got a large wavelength, and then using dispersion condensation to rebuild it together. The physiology or medicine Nobel Prize went to James Allison and Tasu Hojo for the discovery of how cancer can be treated by targeting the immune system. The pair, working separately, discovered proteins that act as a break in the system. They later found that releasing these breaks would allow the immune system to attack cancer cells. Many drugs now known as checkpoint inhibitors have since been developed based on this principle. Immunotherapy is seen as one of the most promising frontiers in cancer research. Andre was inspired to work on cancer as a trainee doctor in the 60s when a classmate died of gastric cancer. My dream became to cure cancer, he told New Scientist in 2016. The Nobel Prize for Chemistry, Peace and Economic Sciences was still to be announced when New Scientist went to print. Okay, this is another article again on this man claims women worse at physics. A physicist speaking at CERN, the home of the Large Hadron Collider near Geneva, Switzerland, has sparked outrage after claiming that women are less capable of physics research. Alessandro Stramati, a University of Pisa, Italy, was speaking in the audience of women beginning their careers in science at a workshop on gender and high energy physics. We can imagine, no, they've set the wrong place there. He gave his talk claiming that the reason men are so overrepresented in the field of physics are because they are overperforming and that physics was invented and built by men. His claims have been widely condemned. CERN has released a statement describing his talk as highly offensive and has suspended him from activities within the organization. Quote, CERN is a place where everyone is welcome and all have the same opportunities regardless of ethnicities, beliefs, gender, or sexual orientation, said the statement. Death toll still arising. The number of fatalities in the massive earthquake and tsunami hit the island of Sulawesi in Indonesia has continued to rise. Now that is the most freakishly shaped island I have ever seen. It's got this, I think it's 1,000 kilometers long, but only all bent up, but it's only most 100 kilometers wide. It's a very long, thin island. surpassing the 1,300 people according to Indonesia's disaster agency. A further 50,000 people have been displaced. Most of the dead were from the city of Palu Pichet, but it has been hard to assess the toll in other areas due to the impassable roads, drowned power lines and phone outages. The 7.5 magnitude quake struck on the 28th of September, creating tsunami that swept waves that reached a height of 6 metres ashore. Many buildings collapsed. Rescuers are still working to free survivors. Quote, the death toll is believed still increasing since many of the bodies were under the wreckage. Many have not been reached, said Stupo Paro Nugbo, the Indonesian National Board of Disaster Management. There are many challenges, said the Indonesian President Joko Widodo. We have to do many things soon, but conditions do not allow us to do so. Well, I have a few comments here. One is that Australia gave a huge number of billion dollars to Indonesia for an early warning system, and it hadn't been maintained. So, but a lot of the quake victims were built on land which is not solid, and so it was the actual earthquake liquefied the land. That is the vibration. This meant that the houses sank beneath them. So there's all these things coming along. So a certain amount of corruption, not maintaining their tsunami system, and also a lot of the quake deaths not being related to the tsunami. So it's an interesting thing to get involved if you hear a bit more about it if you're actually much closer to it. And of course, they're going to build nuclear reactors in the place. Okay, Facebook hit by a massive hack. Facebook has been hit by the biggest hack in history. On the 28th of September, it has discovered an attack that exposed the personal details of 50 million accounts, including those of co-founder Matt Zuckerberg and Matt Chief Operating Officer Sheryl Sandberg. The hackers also gained access to other services that people logged into using their Facebook accounts, such as Tinder, Instagram, Spotify, and Airbnb. To break in, the attackers exploited several different bugs in Facebook's code that together allowed them to trick the site into allowing them to handing over digital keys to individual accounts. Facebook said that it fixed the bugs and reset the keys of those affected. The attack allowed the hackers to see anything users can see on their own profile, including names, dates of birth, friends, family members, as well as private photos. Such information can be used online scams. Facebook is working with police, but says it's yet does not yet know who's behind the attack or where it came from. It's a bit of an idea. Now, this is an interesting article. Tomatoes tamed again with CRISPR. So, clustered, regularly interspaced, palindromic, repeats, CRISPR. Okay, with Cas9. I forget that check that. So this is a piece of DNA code to pick up to A, produce the CRISPR, the Cas9 cleaving enzyme, which goes out and floats around, and the Cas9 cleaving enzyme is programmed with the CRISPR gene sequence, and palindrome means like race car or Glen Elg. There's a start, the sequence starts to a middle and then reverses to finish off. So it's clustered, regularly interspaced, palindromic repeats. My concern is the IS. Okay, and gene editing opens the way for healthier crops. It took at least 3,000 years to domesticate the tomato. Now, two teams, one in China, the other in Brazil, Germany and the US, have done it all over again in less than 3 years, only better in some ways because the tomatoes are more nutritious than those we currently eat. So that's amazing. So tomato was a non-edible, sort of nothing fruit, and we've sort of gradually selected it to become a creation of humankind. So like you put a moggy in the desert, well, they survive for, well, say, like a chihuahua. It's got no hope of survival. Okay. So it's something we've genetically engineered by natural selection. Okay. This approach relies on the CRISPR genome editing technique could not only improve existing crops, but could also be used to turn thousands of wild plants into new crops. Now, this is actually quite interesting. This is where CRISPR really counts. A third team in the US has already begun to do this with a relative of the tomato called the ground cherry. This fast-track domestication could help make the world's food supply healthier and far more resilient to climate change and diseases such as rust fungus and devastating, wheat crops. Quote, we could transform what we eat, end quote, says Jörg Kudler of the University of Münster in Germany, a member of the international team that worked on the tomato. Well, not a tomato, but the tomato concept. There are 50,000 edible plants in the world, but only 90% of our energy comes from just 15 crops. Okay, well, that's sufficiently not enough information to tell me about what's going on. Wild tomatoes, native to the Andes in South America, produce pea-sized fruit. Over many generations, people transformed the plant by picking mutants with desirable traits such as larger fruits. But when a single mutant is plucked from a larger population for breeding, genetic diversity is lost, and the desirable mutation sometimes comes with unwanted traits. For instance, tomatoes grown for supermarkets have lost much of their flavor. By comparing the genomes of food plants with their wild relatives, biologists are working out what changes occurred for the domestication. Two teams of tomato researchers have used this knowledge to reintroduce these changes from scratch while maintaining or even enhancing the desirable traits of wild strains. Kudler's team made six changes. For instance, they tripled the size of the fruit by editing a gene called FW2.2 and got more tomatoes per truss by editing another one called MULT, M-U-L-T. The historical domestication of tomatoes led to lower levels of red pigment lycopene, which is commercial throughout, which is thought to be good for us. So, I'd like to know what lycopene, L-Y-C-O-P-N-E. I'll see if I can memorize that for molecular tour. So it's lycopene, see if I can remember that. The international team boosted its instead. Wild tomatoes have twice as much lycopene as cultivated ones. The newly domesticated one has five times as much. So, is that another 2.5 over wild ones, or 5 over wild ones? I suppose it's the, okay. They're quite tasty, says Kula, and very aromatic. Researchers redomesticated several strains of wild tomatoes with desirable traits lost in domestication. In this way, they managed to make the strain resistant to the called bacterial spot race. They also created another strain that is more salt tolerant, with the one with high levels of vitamin C. We will taste them when the plants are mature in a few weeks, says Kasia Go at the Chinese Academy of Sciences in Beijing. I'm just always a bit iffy about these types of stuff. You go, having travelled to Chinese universities. New commercial crops. Meanwhile, Joyce Van Eck at the Boyce Thompson Institute in New York State and her colleagues are using the same approach to domesticate the ground cherry for the first time. Ground cherries are already sold to some extent in U.S. farmers' money, but they're hard to produce because the plant has a sprawling growth and small fruits drop off when ripe. Van Eck's team edited the plants to increase the fruit size, make growth more compact, and stop the fruit falling off. Quote, there's potential for this to become a commercial crop, says Van Eck. But taking the work further would be expensive because of the need to pay for a CRISPR license to get the regulatory approval. Mm-hmm. This approach could boost the use of many obscure plants, says Jonathan Jones, Sainsbury Laboratories in UK. But it's be hard for them to get so popular that they become new staples, he says. Three teams are already eyeing plants that could, in the words of an ex-team, be catapulted to the mainstream. So, Jonathan Jones, Justin Bleaver, Van X, it's the ground cherry tomato person. Including foxtail, oak grass, and amaranth. By choosing wild plants that are drought or heat tolerant, says Goyle, we could create crops which will thrive even as the plant warms. So goes from the Chinese things. Interesting how this is all spliced together. Culler didn't want to reveal which species were in his team's sights, because CRISPR has made it so easy. Anyone with the right skills could go home to the lab and do this. So I'm not going to tell you what we're doing, because it's now such a joke that even a school kid could do it. And that would be great. A school kid doing genetic engineering. We've created a corrupt-proof administration. Okay. Ministry particle seen in Antarctica by Chelsea White. Something strange has happened in Antarctica. A balloon floating above the icy desolation may have detected a weird particle that can't be explained by our understanding of current understanding of physics. Okay. So it's a balloon floating in Antarctica. Beautiful picture. It mightn't be able to explain it. Well, let's see what they've got to say. NASA's Arctic Impulsive Transit Antenna, ANITA, detector is an array of radio antennas attached to an enormous balloon that flies missions 37 kilometers above the continent. It looks for radio pulses emitted by objects such as tau particles. So a tau is a heavy electron going in, and you can see all these, this gondola of radio detectors, and this is ready for a launch site in Antarctica, and you can see a huge balloon in the distance. 37 kilometers is fairly high up, it's well above the stratosphere, and you can see an array of solar panels to charge the telemetry there. But in 2000, so this happens, let's see, tau. It looks for the radio pulses emitted by objects such as tau particles, quote, a heavy kind of electron emerging from the ice. Well, yeah, one would wonder why it would be emerging from the ice, but this would be interesting. This happens when other particles called neutrinos, oh well, there we go, and decay and pass through the Earth from space. And it also looks for cosmic ray showers, a form of high-energy radiation from space. So your tau can actually be... You have a lump of ice in your drink. I think it has to be a tau neutrino. Yeah, it comes in and reverse reacts. And I don't know what it would be react with. Probably an electron to make a normal electron into a... to really think it would have to be an anti-neutrino as well. Okay, but in 2006-2014, detectors saw two events that didn't look like either of these things. So that's the cosmic rays and the tau electrons. That is very fascinating. Wow. That's just mind-blowing. That you've turned the whole Antarctica into a tau electron detector. I have to work out what the Feynman diagram is for a neutrino coming in, an anti-neutrino coming in, or it would be a neutrino coming in and a tau electron going out. They reached Anita's angles at Steve Angles, exiting the Earth at 2735 degrees below the horizon. So, yeah, there's not only cosmic rays deflected off the ice approach at these angles, but such rays have their own polarity or orientation flipped. Okay, so this is one of the things that your polarization does flip as it reflects. How you can measure the polarization of a cosmic ray, I just mind blow. Oh, okay, so they're looking at the radio pulse emitted from it. Okay. And so you can measure the polarization of an incoming radio pause. It would be really interesting, the antenna shape. Derek Fox of Pennsylvania University and his colleagues wanted to investigate whether these signals could be signals of a new particle beyond the standard model of physics. Of course you'd want to. Our current best description of how particles and forces interact. They ran simulations of a billion neutrinos passing through the Earth, which is like nothing, mate, because there's billions of them. They ran the possibility that ANITA is detecting a tau particle from these neutrinos at such a teach angles, which is a confidence of 5.8 sigma. Okay, so just out, because I think 5 sigma is that there's a golden rule. So, I think what I mean is that the tau particles come so close to the horizon. It's not that it's, what I mean is the steep angle, 0 degrees is vertically up in this, oh, here we go. Physicists normally treat anything about 5 sigma as an important discovery. That's why looking beyond the standard model is necessary, says Fox, 0.8 sigma. So this is a lot. Otherwise, the properties of these events are improbable. He and his team suggest that previously proposed supersymmetric tau, or stau, is behind the mysterious signals. Well, you've only got 2 signals there, so if you had 1, it would be within the limits. Supersymmetric is theoretically extension of the standard model, suggests all fundamental particles have a much heavier supercatapeg. Although this should not be found at CERN at all, I know there's no supersymmetry there, I don't understand what's going on. Supersymmetry models that describe this kind of signal, Fox has a team that said have already exist, he says. They include charged particles that are massive, decay to the tau has a long enough lifetime and can travel through 6,000 kilometers of Earth. So the actual, I don't quite understand this. The maximum depth of the Earth is 12,000 kilometres, 12,600, so I don't know where they got 6,000 from. Bingo, he says. Our official interpretation of events is that we're not sure what they are, says Steffi Wiesel of the California Public State University, who's a member of the ANITA collaboration. But she thinks the explanation will turn out to be ordinary cosmic rays. She says that if these stau particles exist, other experiments ought to have seen that's my exact thing. Or, for instance, the Ice Cube Neutrino Observatory, also in Antarctica, has been detecting neutrinos since 1710, but is set deep within the ice, so it doesn't see particles in the air that ANITA does. Viv Loeb of Harvard University says we need more evidence to confirm that these particular particles aren't due to an error in the experimental interpretation, but findings are far so far are compelling. The multifaceted evidence in this work does not allow wiggle room for explaining the 2 ANITA events known with known standard particles, he says. Neanderthals had surprisingly dexterous hands. Our extinct Neanderthal cousins could hold objects between their fingers and thumb like a pen. Just like we'd hold a pen. Sorry, this is either I'm reading ahead or I know ahead, because the hands were more nimble than anyone thought. Anyone helps explain the many skillful tasks the Neanderthals have shown to have performed, such as creating tools, painting on cave walls, and threading seashells onto strings to make jewelry. These activities are hard to explain if they were clumsy. It's interesting that it's not only the Neanderthals, it's not the Homo erectus were colouring seashells at this stage. I think it's 3 million years ago. It's a pretty enormously long time ago that the first art occurred. Neanderthal hand bones were much chunkier than ours, implying a lack of fine control. Previous studies of bones mostly suggest Neanderthals were unable to form a precision grip with fingers and thumb. Instead, they were thought to use a power grip involving all fists, the way that small children sometimes hold crowns. To find out how Neanderthals use their hands, Kandel Havarti of the University of Tübingen in Germany miraculously studied 3D scans of ephyses, the position points of bones where muscles were attached. Muscles are attached? I think it's tendons attached, my friend. Tendons are attached to your hands, so you've got no muscles in your fingers, although they would be clubbing. And the wrestling grip uses a different set of muscles to power grip. And those muscles can get used more result in larger entheses. Avati's team previously showed this by studying modern humans who had done different jobs. This is interesting. The team examined the hand entheses of 16 anthills and 6 early modern humans. The anthills spent most of their time using precision grips, while the early modern humans used both precision and power grips. So, the anthills have got a bigger brain and they're also a bit more delicate to us. You mentioned them all being a bit dapper. So, I say, wow. I think at the moment we think the anthills of, perhaps they were just too English. They'll go, I dare say, what are these modern humans doing around? Oh, don't worry about George, go back to, we'll just eat the odd mouse here, we'll just keep in ecological sense. They just ruined the whole ecosystem. I wonder what's going to happen. We'll go extinct. Aristotle recognizes the archaeological and anatomical fossil evidence to Savati. It was previously supposed neanderthals relied on force for their manual activities, but this perception is at odds with the mounting archaeological evidence for sophisticated cultural behavior of neanderthals. I think this is one thing we really need to mix it up and make them, I think if we made them all dapper. This huge lightning storm coming in at the moment. Monkeypox in the UK. Oh, shibbies. I'll have to get in. I've got to get into the washing. Monkeypox in the UK. All you need to know. This is a question and answer section by Claire Wilson. I've heard of Ebola and Zika. What about monkeypox? Monkeypox is caused by a relative of the smallpox virus. Causes fever, headaches, and a rash that turns into blisters like those of chickenpox. It's usually just a mild illness lasting a few weeks, but it can sometimes be deadly. As the name suggests, it was first identified in monkeys and is mainly confined to central western Africa. It has been reported death rate between 1 and 10%. Well, that's bloody lethal, isn't it? Why is it in the news? 3 people in the UK have been diagnosed with monkeypox since the start of September and are now being treated in hospital by tropical disease specialists. It hasn't been seen since the UK before. How has it reached the UK? Well, I bet those people have been to that area in Africa. The 2 patients seem to have caught the infections while in Nigeria, where it is currently an upsurge of the disease. A 3rd healthcare worker who looked after the 2nd patient. How worried should I be? Don't panic. The disease doesn't pass easily between people as it requires bodily contact with fluids or being close enough to someone to breathe the airborne droplets. Such droplets generally can't travel more than a metre or so, meaning there's little risk to the bullet. So why the fuss? Any disease that circulates in animals can be passed to people as a potential cause of a new pandemic if it mutates. Monkeypox has no specific treatment or vaccine. Smallpox vaccine gives immunity to monkeypox, and is now being used in the UK hospitals involved. What happens next? In the UK, public health officials are following up all the close contacts with 3 patients for 3 weeks. Unless you're one of these friends, families or doctors, you probably have nothing to worry about. Nigeria is also investigating the outbreak and working with the United Kingdom. Okay. His next article, it's about robot authors. And given that there's so much rubbish written by humans, I don't know, well, at least what they have to say. Quote, a new author is in town and it isn't human. Story by Douglas Heaven. Quote, it has been 2 weeks and the last of my kind has gone. As the opening lines to a story about alien abductions go, it isn't bad. It's even more impressive when you realise the writer isn't human, but a newly developed artificial intelligence. I just dismay with the use of the word artificial intelligence. Getting machines to create stories is hard. At a minimum, a good yarn must have a plausible sequence of events that lead you from beginning to end, yet maintaining coherence over multiple sentences is something that existing text generation systems struggle with. They write very simplistic way of deciding word by word what's to say next is Angela Fan of the Facebook AI research who helped create the story writing AI. That means each sentence may not relate to the ones before. To get around the issue, Facebook team broke the story generation task into two steps. First, the system creates a stretch of story structure, then fleshes out the scaffold with the full sentences to produce stories that are 150 words long. So that's two paragraphs easily. The team trained its neural network, a type of algorithm inspired by human brain, on neural network of 27 Facebook, I believe it, 272,600 human written stories paired with prompts such as the mage, the warrior and the priest, or aliens are abducting humans. These are taken from an online forum for writing prompts, where the user inspires each other to write by submitting story premises. The AI sometimes repeats itself in sentences such as in the line, "She wasn't sure if she was going to cry or if she just wanted to cry." Fans want to improve the system so that it looks back at what it's already written and amends it. But the team is happy that software could produce stories with characters remained sad or whether stayed stormy. Staying on topic is quite difficult for neural models because they have no explicit memories, says Pham. Researchers, this is the entire thing about narrative and artificial intelligence. It's sort of almost, I find it bewildering. The researchers evaluated their system by asking code workers on Amazon's Mechanical Turk. Okay, so this is really interesting. So Mechanical Turk is where rather than give it to a massive computer, you give it out and it's outsourced to individual people. Internet marketplace, whether they prefer the stories over those created by a previous text generation technique. People prefer the new system stories around 67% of the time. The results are impressive, says Magritte at the Georgia Institute of Technology. It's also responsible for the skeptical of the cherry-picked examples, but overall, I'm a big fan of this work. And that's what I'd say. Wright and his colleagues have developed their own techniques for generating more consistent story. Instead of sticking to a prompt, their neural network aims for a particular climax, such as two characters getting married or a villain being punished. It's a drip-fed rewards as it generates story events to keep on track. Reed's team trained its systems on a series of events taken from summaries of movie plots. People on Mechanical Turk again judge the stories generated by... So this is something we really have to understand now, what Mechanical Turk is. I'm not quite sure. And what was the other? There was another far out. It's the chemical in tomatoes, I think it is. I have to remember. But I've forgotten it. Preen? Okay. In my head. Judge stories generated by the technique to have more plausible event ordering and more coherent plots than stories written with a previous approach. Facebook's AI research work on story generation is part of its efforts to improve text generation in general, says Pham. For example, it could improve the suggestions to what to write next that pop up on your phone when you text someone. Software can string sentences together with more consistency will also help machine translation. Existing algorithms are good at translating individual sentences but cannot translate entire paragraphs well. Story generation tests algorithms in challenging areas. Now, I just have to really admit there, that's when I'm using Google Translate to do Latin. That's why I think it's because you do need a little bit of... You firstly have to know the historical context. You have to get a good translation before read it, so it doesn't work. Now, what is the lycopene is the thing I have to memorize. So you can hear it beginning to rain again in Australia. I'm going to pack 39 minutes. More Arctic ships may slow warming. So I bet that's okay, so what we know, there's ice, the diesel smog makes the ice blacker, absorbs heat, so it'll probably be cloud formation from it there. Let's see what I have to say. More Arctic ships may slow warming by Michael Marshall. More ships sailing in the Arctic as summer ice retreats might bring an unexpected upside, slightly slowing the rapid warming around the North Pole, but would also have another less pleasant consequences. The Arctic is warming faster than anywhere on the planet, and as a result, the ice in the region has retreated for decades. The Arctic may see its first ice-free summer for millennia in the next decades, although the ice would still form again in winter. During summer, waters that were once impassable are opening up, including the North Sea route running along the Australian, the Russian Arctic coast. Shipping firm Maersk said last week that one of its vessels used the route, took it from Vladivostok on Russia's Pacific coast to the Baltic Sea port of St. Petersburg. And that is bloody impressive. Now, you would see how the Russians stole St. Petersburg from the Swedes. It's an awful long campaign. It's actually quite sickening to read what the Russians did there. We've known for some time the shipping in Antarctica is likely to have climate impacts, one from another, says Scott Stephens of the University of Connecticut. That's because ships release pollution. This includes black carbon, fine particles that have a dual warming impact. In the air, they have a greenhouse effect, and when deposited on ice, they darken it, causing it to absorb more heat. On the flip side, aerosols on ships' emission, like sulfur dioxide, cause more clouds to form, which reflects heat and therefore cools the area. You actually think, you know how we pull out all the sulfur from fuels would actually add more sulfur to the fuels if you want more clouds to form? That's just my point. I think if you really wanted to, my thing is that you would choke, get all the ships out on the seas producing sulfur dioxide. It would be acidic, right, but it would cool the planet. And I think that's my view. So you could, you know, coming close to land, I don't know. Previous studies focused on one but not the other of these, or used overly simplistic climate models. No previous studies had attempted to look at this comprehensively, said Stevens, so he and his colleagues did so. They simulated Arctic temperatures from 2006 to 2099, calculating emissions from shipping and estimating which routes would be passable at different times, then inferring emissions of ships. There was a very clear signal, and the signal was cooling, he said. If greenhouse gas emissions continued at the current rate, but Arctic shipping didn't increase, the model warmed by 10 degrees. But when shipping was included, the warming was reduced to, wait for it, 9 degrees, 1 degree difference. The CI, which is good enough because you will never have to actually prove your model. The sea ice also retreated slightly. Yes, the overall shipping cooling effects makes a little difference. The Arctic is still warming at twice the global average and will be much warmer by the end of the century, said Stevens. Besides the 1 degree reduction in warming, shipping needs keeps polluting the air, says Dimitri Spink at the University of Leeds, UK. That's a bad idea. The World Health Organization says outdoor pollution, including shipping, causes 4.2 million deaths every year. Yeah, in cities. But if I double the pollution out in the high seas, I don't think it's going to... But that's where I really resent this type of article. Because I think it's bad, but you've got to be sensible when you give these things. Stephenson adds that sending ships through the Arctic has other hazards, like the risk of oil spills. There's very little infrastructure in the Arctic to deal with disasters. Yeah, but also I think one has to know what the cause of all the oil spills were. I think I'm going to close this because I'm going to be drowned out by the rain.
podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.